My name is Jeff Lerner, and I interview elite performers from a wide range of disciplines, entrepreneurs, athletes, celebrities, scientists, artists, and more. This is Unlock Your Potential. Welcome to another episode of Unlock Your Potential. Jeff Lerner, your host. Always so excited to be back with you, having amazing conversations with amazing human beings. And today we have a doozy. His name is Tom Quitproof Jones. I don't think that's his legal middle name. It's even more than that. It's his spiritual middle name, Quitproof. Great, great term. Love that term. Tom Jones, he's most likely the greatest athlete you've never heard of. He's an extreme athlete. He's a Marine veteran. And he has done some bananas stuff. He ran at a marathon pace for 121 consecutive days from Huntington Beach, California, where he lives and is currently located, all the way to New York City. He set the first ever stand-up paddleboard long-distance record. He paddleboarded. Like, I went paddleboarding once. I was in, Cayman Islands, you know, and I kind of puttered around a coral reef or something. It was pretty cool. But he took it a little extra, went 1,250 miles from Oregon to Mexico in 93 days. And between all that, he found it the time to be a seven-time Muay Thai fighting champion. He's won a Muay Thai prize fight and ran a full marathon in the same day. Clearly got up very early that morning. And on top of it all, he brings all that together in this pretty glorious way where he stands for faith, freedom, America, good old-fashioned values, and being ultimately quit-proof. Tom, I could say a lot more, but they probably want to hear from you more than me about you. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Jeff. I'm really honored to be here. I do a lot of media and so on and so forth, but this one is especially important to me. I've been after trying to meet you for a while. I'm glad that we get to meet this way. And I think this is going to be fun. It's going to be informative, and it's going to be incredibly powerful for the people that are listening. So let's do it.
Let's do it. Okay. So, I mean, listen, there's, forgive me for addressing you as a cliche. There's guys like you that make the rest of us feel whatever we feel, right? You know, I mean, I remember when I was a teenager, I met a guy that had climbed Mount Everest seven times. You know, I went on like a backpacking trip in the Mount Rainier wilderness area in Washington. And I'm like, oh, I'm a kid. I'm a tough kid. I'm going to climb Mount Rainier. And this guy, he had climbed Everest seven times. I want to say K2 four times. You know, he did insane rock climbing. And I'm like, oh, okay, there's a whole other level that some people seem to operate at that, you know, makes us mere mortals. I don't know if we're impressed or intimidated, probably both. So now that I get to ask one of those guys, like, what the hell, man? How does a person cross that threshold? Because, I mean, I know how success in anything goes. It's cumulative. It's iterative. It's not like you just woke up one day and did all these things. You stack it. But nonetheless, you take it so much further than most people. Like, what's really going on under the hood here?
Well, it's interesting because you do the same thing with entree. So, you know, you could flip the coin over and I could say the same exact same thing about you. So that's what I think makes this a great conversation. You know, a lot of people assume that I came from a really great family, had a great mom, had a great dad, had a great education. My parents helped me with buy my first home. And that wasn't the case. My father had cancer, kidney disease, and tuberculosis. I found out when he was 7 years old. My mother was extremely mentally ill, in and out of mental hospitals. She heard auditory responses, like things like telling her to kill all of her kids and herself. And so that was my childhood. In fact, my dad, because of the pain medications that he was on, would wake me up at night just based out on pain medicine with a gun to my head or a knife to my throat, telling me I don't think you should live. Life isn't worth living. Life isn't fair. One night he beat me so bad. One day he beat me so bad that I didn't even hear it, but the cops break in the door and they remove me from my home, put me in a facility. I became a ward of the state of California, and I was placed in the Masonic Home for Children to be raised. And right away, the caregivers there started grooming me for sexual abuse, which I endured for 4 long years until I ran away from that place. So, you know, that was my start in life.
Yeah. And, okay. You know, I swear, you know, I've done this show, this is probably episode 260, 270 or something. And I started this show because I was, you know, essentially on a quest to create a data supported, like an evidence-based science of success and human potential. And so I interview people that are sort of outliers in various areas, whether it's athletics or business or the creative arts or whatever. And I'm really searching for these commonalities. And right out of the gate, we have hit on what I've basically decided is, and it's ironic and it's paradoxical because it's nothing you wish on people. You don't wish bad things to happen to people. But I've basically landed on all this really terrible stuff that happens to people is the crucible in which their future success is forged. And it's like, yeah, I would never wish it on people, but also on the flip side, I meet a lot of people who want certain outcomes or certain possibilities for their life. And deep down, I'm saying to myself, I don't think you've suffered enough, you know? But so, yeah, I mean, right out of the gate, I assume that you're correlating that to your ability to endure and to persevere and to ultimately become quit-proof.
You know, it was part of the process. So, because I was being molested and I was so confused, after I was removed and made it ward of the state after my father died, I still kept in touch with my mentally ill mother. And when I ran away from the children's home when I was 17, I ran to my mom's house, and it wasn't soon after that I found out once again she wasn't the answer to my problems. So, Jeff, I did what I feel is one of the greatest things that somebody can do to become quit-proof, is I checked myself into the mental institution to get professional help. And when I checked myself into the mental institution, during the process, I was put in there for a 5150 hold. And during the process of me being in there, I found out something really transformative. I found out I wasn't crazy at all. I found out I just had problems, you know, and that problems have solutions. And right then and there, I started changing this victim mentality to a victor. That was sort of where the transition started happening. So when I checked myself out of the mental hospital, my older half-brother suggested that I go join the military. So the only branch of the military that would take somebody without a high school education and with a troubled background was the United States Marine Corps. So I ran down, I joined the Marine Corps. I was happy to, you know, have a crucible to take my new victor energy to and give it a test run. And it was interesting because when I got to the Marine Corps, we get off the bus and we're standing on the yellow footprints on attention. And I look around and everyone's terrified. And I look at the guy next to me, happen to be like twice my size. And I'm like, why are you shaking? And he just looked back at me, just terrified. And right then and there, where everyone else was completely terrified, I was right at home. I had already been institutionalized. In the children's home, we had a chow hall. We had an infirmary. I slept with other people. And I had already woken up in the middle of the night to people that were way meaner than any drill instructor. So for me, Marine Corps was like, yeah, I got a great place to train and get stronger mentally and physically, and all my clothes matched, and you know, where everybody else was freaking out, I was like, this is a great place, you know?
So that's a great perspective. I mean, you're somebody's, it's a good reminder, like your nightmare is somebody else's dream, right? I mean, it's all relative. And I mean, I feel like that anecdote really speaks to gratitude, right? Finding what can be great and what can I be grateful for in any situation. But I mean, that might actually speak to why suffering is so intrinsic, it seems, to the unlock of success, because really extreme hardship teaches you to seek out that for which you can be grateful and that which you can build on.
Yeah. And so like in the mental hospital, I sledgehammered down that wall. I turned that adversity into opportunity. In the Marine Corps, where everybody else saw adversity, I saw opportunity. Again, sledgehammering down that wall and turning that adversity over and looking for the opportunity in it. And that quit proof, that's what we teach people how to do, is it, you know, to sledgehammer down the wall of adversity and turn it over and find the opportunity in the adversity and go down that road and not lay down and quit. You know, so why do people quit? You know, they run into walls and hurdles and obstacles and things that they feel that they can't break through. One of the things that you say that I read that you said, really, I just honestly, when I read it, I jumped up and I was like, yeah, you know, because you said the reason people quit is they're not willing to do the hard work it takes to get it done. Something to that effect. And again, same thing, you know, so you sledgehammer down the wall, you take that adversity and you figure out how to turn it into an opportunity and you go down that road and you don't quit.
So let me ask, I want to dig into this more on what you just said, but first I want to back up a little second. First of all, I want to just say nod to Van Halen. Thanks to Van Halen, I know what a 5150 is. I remember looking it up because they had an album called 5150, and it is that 72-hour hold where they essentially assess you, give you time to stabilize and cool off, let's say, and then they figure out, is this person ill or is this person just having troubles or what? So I'm curious, you said did I hear you say correctly that it was during that time period in that institution, which I'm curious how long it was, but you said it was during that time that you kind of flipped from this your mindset from victim to victor? Is that correct?
That's where it started, yes. That's where the first...
And how long were you in there?
I was in there about a month because what happened was I was on the 5150 hold and I didn't feel stable. So they took me down in the hospital waiting room and they're like, okay, well, we're going to let you go. And I was like, well, I don't feel stable. I feel like I still need to be here. And they're like, no, we've evaluated you for 72 hours. Like, you need to go. So Jeff, I walked over, I picked up a big potted plant and I threw it through the wall. And they're like, okay, you're going back in. And this time you're going into what we call the closed ward. And that's where they keep the people that have the severe problems. And then they have a rubber room, you know, I was in there mm-hmm. for a few days and then I got put into the closed ward. And that's where I saw people that really had mental problems, right? These were people that had real mental problems. And I'm like, I don't have those problems. I've got problems, but I don't have those problems.
Right, right.
You know, and problems have solutions. So I'm going to get myself out of here and figure it out. And that's when I got out of there and I joined the Marine Corps. And, you know, first time in my life, I had a place that meant what they said what they meant. They weren't shapeshifters. They weren't trying to sexually molest me or anything like that. And if you did something right, you got rewarded for it. And if you didn't, you got punished. It was very structured. It was very black and white. And Jeff, because of that, I was already way ahead of everybody else going into the gate, I graduated number one top out of my class as what they call series honor man. So there was a few thousand people there and I graduated number one out of all of them. And so once I got out of the Marine Corps, I started working for a guy named Chuck Norris.
Okay.
Really amazing. You know, like you say, you're the average of the people, the five people that you hang around with most in life. I was very fortunate that Chuck Norris was one of the five people that I hung around with the most. Mm-hmm. So I started working with him as a training partner, as a part-time bodyguard, and travel with him from time to time. I remember when he asked me to start working out with him, I was like, oh my gosh, this is like Batman asking me to be Robin. I was like, hell yes, I'm in. So it was really interesting the way that we sort of bonded. I go up.
Wait, so how did you meet? So you come out of the Marines. How did you meet Chuck Norris?
So great question. When I was in the Marine Corps, I was stationed in Beaufort, South Carolina. And I had been in martial arts all my younger life through the children's home. I was in it for survival because I never fought one person at a time when I was in the children's home. So I was in martial arts constantly. When I was in the Marine Corps, I was in martial arts. And there was this, so I was stationed in Beaufort, South Carolina. There was only one martial arts school in Beaufort, South Carolina. It was a Chuck Norris school. So I was training there, and there was one of the biggest karate tournaments in the United States called the Battle of Atlanta. I competed in that, and I won. And Chuck Norris happened to be there. And so we met and became friendly in Beaufort, South Carolina. And then when I got out of the Marine Corps, I wanted to keep training in martial arts, and the only place that had a Chuck Norris school was Huntington Beach, California. Mm-hmm. So I started training in Huntington Beach. And the guy that was running the school kept it really, really quiet, but he was Chuck's cousin. Mm. And he came up to me one day and he said, "Hey, Chuck Norris and his wife own a restaurant in Newport Beach called Woody's Wharf, and they're looking for doormen. And Chuck's looking for black belts because I guess other doormen were pounding people and they were getting sued. So Chuck wanted his own black belt." So I started working there. To make a long story short, within 3 months, so we reconnected, Chuck and I reconnected, and he's like, "Hey, the guy in South," you know what I mean, "South Carolina." I'm like, "Yeah, you're like Chuck." Right. So I started working at the restaurant as a doorman. Within 3 months, I was the general manager of his restaurant because of my work ethic, and I was going up and I was training with him several times a week at his home, and that evolved into part-time bodyguard, doing things with him, traveling sometimes. But it was really funny because the very first time that we worked out together, I'm like internally doing backflips, you know? I'm just like,
yes,
you know? And so he wants to spar. That's like the first thing that we do. So we touch gloves, and the very first thing that, I mean, literally the very first thing I do is a roundhouse kick flush to his face. Whap. And he has a red mark right on his face, and he backed up, and he has this like bewildered look on his face, and he kind of smiles, and he's like, "So it's going to be like that, huh?" And I was like, "Well, you're like Chuck Norris, you know what I mean?"
Yeah, right.
I'm like completely spazzing out, and he's like, "Okay, no problem." Touch gloves again. He sneaks in real close to me, does a spinning back kick, knocks the wind out of me, knocks me on my ass, and it was the beginning of a really good relationship. So.
Wow, that's cool. It's nice to connect somebody with more than with actual Chuck Norris stories, not just Chuck Norris jokes. No, that's cool. Okay, so that parlays then into what? I mean, obviously, this culminates with these amazing feats, and you're running the Quick Proof movement. But I'd like to
connect those. So this is where the transformation happens. You know, at the time I was working with and for Chuck, I was in the ring fighting. And like I said, I was bodyguarding him part-time. And I went to pick Chuck up at LAX when you could still sort of pick him up at the gate. And it was very late at night. And he was filming, I think, one of the Missing in Action movies. And he's coming, he's just dog-tired coming towards me. And this young child, probably around 10 or 11, is running at him, Chuck. Mm-hmm. And he puts everything down and he mentors this kid right in front of me for about a half hour or so. And it was amazing. And then when he stood up, he gave me probably the first bit of fatherly advice I'd ever had in my life. He looked at me and he goes, "You know, Tom, the more people that you can figure out how to help in your life, the more successful you'll be." And Jeff, right then and there, it was like the biggest why exploded in my heart. Like right then and there, boom. I was like, I had this seminal moment, epiphany. I've got to help people because I can help people. And when you can help people, you should help people. And soon after my relationship with Chuck, so that's when the explosion happened. And I'm like, I got to help people. That's what I got to do with my life. You know, I got to help people somehow. I didn't know how. After I was Chuck moved to Texas. He offered me to go. I stayed here. I started working for a guy named Glenn McCusker, who owned the largest computer memory vending company in the world. And I was his bodyguard. And I was fighting professional at the time, starting to acquire titles fighting. And Glenn would have motivational speakers come into his company. He had like Pat Riley, Lou Holtz, a guy named Ray Pelletier, who was America's coach. And they would come in and he had 500 employees, 200 of them were salespeople. So he would bring these motivational speakers in to try to motivate his sales force. And I was at a time in my life where I was just soaking this information up. And all of a sudden in 1998, I decide, I know how I'm going to help people. I was running for a title fight and I'm like, how am I going to help people? I can't like go beat the crap out of somebody and help people. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Was it going to work? Like, and then I'm running and I was like, I know, I'll run a long distance, super long distance. And people ask me why I'm doing that. And I'm going to do it because I had taken a tour of a foster home, a facility in my area that wanted a playground. And I wanted to help them buy this playground. And that's how I was trying to figure out, how am I going to help them buy the playground? I can't go beat the crap out of somebody. And it's like, and I was like, I know, I'll run a super long way and people want to know why, and I can share my story. And anyway, I stopped at foster care facilities along the route to share my story with foster kids. And this started to evolve. And then Jeff, when we dedicated that playground, that was it. I was hooked. I had my drug. And since 1998, I've been lending my athletic ability to worthwhile causes. And that's what I did all the running. That's why I did all the paddleboarding for in the environment. And recently I ran the 76 consecutive marathons from Alabama to Utah for patriotism. So that became my drug.
So, you know, I think it's fascinating. I've had a few people on the show, a couple names come to mind who you may well know, James Lawrence, the Iron Cowboy, who's done whatever 50 marathons in 50 states in 50 days. I had Colin O'Brady on the show, who walked by himself across the entirety of Antarctica carrying dragging a 300-pound sled. So, like, first of all, I consider myself so blessed that I've even just gotten to meet guys that do these sorts of things. And I think it's easy to put you guys like you on a pedestal and create a distance, a separation. Like, these are inordinately gifted, blessed, fortunate individuals that just have this ability to do this thing, and whatever it takes for them to do what they do does not apply to what I am trying to do, little old me in my little old life, where I'm not setting a Guinness record, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that at all, but I think that's a lot of times how we are tempted to look at those situations. But you've obviously had a lot of time to think, especially when you're doing those things. Have you really looked within and asked or studied or assessed, like, what is it that allows you to keep going in these types of pursuits? Like, what's really going on? Help humanize it for us, so to speak, if you would.
And quick proof, we have 5 points of a star. Your North Star, your why. That's what keeps you going. You know, when I ran the 121 marathons in a row, I was stopping at foster facilities along my route to share my story. And when I started, it was the 4th of July. I was the Grand Marshal for the 4th of July parade here in Huntington Beach, along with Arnold Schwarzenegger. I started July 4th. When I ran across the Mojave Desert, it was July.
Yeah.
Okay. When I got to the Rocky Mountains, it was August. So my toenails were falling off. Blisters all over the place. I was so sore I could barely walk. But I micro goaled it. So I broke that major goal of getting to New York down to micro goals. All I had to do was make it to the next children's home. Because when I shared my story with these children, I watched them change in front of my eyes. So I'm just like everybody else. Everybody has what I have inside of them. I just had my North Star. In fact, one of the children's homes I stopped out. I partnered on that run with a syndicated radio talk show host. Her name was Dr. Laura Schlesinger.
Sure.
And she had bags called My Stuff Bags. And the reason I got attracted to what she was doing was when I was ripped away from my home and I was placed in a holding facility, all I had was a clothes on my back. Well, her My Stuff Bag gave kids something they could call their home, their own, right? They got a bag of stuff that was their very own. And I knew from personal experience how scary it was to be removed from my home, placed in a facility with the clothes on my back, have nothing else. So I was partnering with her. I handed out 10,000 of these My Stuff duffel bags. And one of the homes that I stopped at, so all I wanted from the kids when I handed out these bags was either a thank you or a high five or both. That's it. That's all I wanted. So I got them and I hand this little girl a bag and she starts walking away. I said, excuse me, either thank you or a high five. And she just squeaks out a little thank you. And within moments, I start seeing the staff tear up and a couple of them start to cry. I'm like, what's going on? And they come in, they whisper, they're like, she hasn't spoke a word since she got here 6 months ago. And you did that. I was like, bam. Okay, I don't care if I have to run on glass in 115 degree heat. This is worth it. My life is worth it. I have a purpose in life. My North Star is in place, my anchor, so that when, and that's what we teach people in QuitProof is like, when your North Star is in place, it has to be what you really, 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 and if I didn't say really, really want, because like Mike Tyson says, and I think you well know, because I know your story. Of being a piano player and not being able to move your hands and, you know, taking on something new and all the adversity that you face and overcome to create a $50 million plus company and all the things that you do, you know, and that's why I was immediately attracted to you. I'm like, oh, this guy's just like me. He's in the business world. You know, he's overcome all kinds of obstacles, but his North Star was in place. He wanted to help people. He wanted for people to have better lives. And he knew that he could provide that for them. You know, so to answer, that's the long answer to your question is like, hey man, your North Star's got to be in place. You've got to have courage. You got to step up. You got to have courage. You have to take action. That's another point. You know, I ran. I put one foot in front of the other, pushed real, because people are like, hey, how do you do that? I'm like, well, this is going to be very anticlimactic, but it breaks down to this. You put one foot in front of the other and push real hard until you get there. And no matter what, you don't give up, give in, tap out, and quit. You find a way. That's it.
Yeah, it seems so. Yeah, I mean, first of all, when you explain it in the context of the children's homes, that makes it a lot easier to process, right? Of course, yeah, especially. But what I have to imagine is like, it's not like you're just showing up at these children's homes unannounced, like sweaty and bedraggled stranger, like, I just ran really far. Can I come in?
Yeah.
That, of course, they're probably aware that you're coming and they've arranged for you to speak. And so for you, this goes to my theory, because I mean, between my Unlock Your Potential movement, you know, which is a book and a podcast, and I do some coaching and I have some events for that. And then I have Entre, which is this, really, it's another Unlock Your Potential movement through startup entrepreneurship. Like, I'm in this business of like, what does it take to help the average person make some different decisions and some different commitments in their life that produce a completely different future or potential future? And I've isolated it to, I think, a couple key concepts, and I think you really just highlighted two of them. And they may be the two biggest ones. One is telling some people what you're doing. So that the whole time you're doing it, you know there are people watching, there are people waiting, and there are people that to some degree, because of the way you've presented it, they're looking to you to show them either what's possible or at the very least what's possible for you, right? Because you've announced it. And this is, I talk a lot about it. I'm like, if you want to build a great business or you want to have a great marriage or you want to lose 50 pounds or whatever your big thing you want to do is, tell a bunch of people what you're doing. And I know there's a lot of people that say, no, keep your plans to yourself. because as soon as you announce them, people will start to talk you out of it. They'll chip away at it. But look, I think it's an a priori condition that you're at the point where when you declare you're going to do something, you believe yourself. Mm-hmm. And you're not scared that other people are going to chip away at it. But then when you tell other people, you harness the natural human desire to not look like a hypocrite or not look like a somebody that doesn't keep their word. And so then you're more likely to follow through. And then to your point, if you know that those people are attaching some level of belief in what's possible for them to what they see you do, now you've got an even bigger reason. But then that's the one thing, right? It's like tell people and create this environment where people are watching and you're trying to deliver on an expectation. But the other piece is find something to do that ties in with your life story. And so for you, these children homes weren't just a good cause. They were an environment that you had such a deep connection to that it probably meant more to you than anything in the world to help transform that environment for other children. Is that true? Hey there, real quick, I just wanted to let you know, I have been concentrating a lot lately on providing tons of value to my text message community. This could be random thoughts, this could be letting you be the first to know about an event I'm planning or a special I'm running or a free training I'm hosting. Anyway, just shoot me a text to get subscribed. The number is 702-996-3926. Thanks so much. Let's get back to the podcast.
It's more than true. And to act as a living example that, hey, I got these titles. I got these world titles. You know what I mean? I was afforded a sixth grade education. I was removed from my home just like you were. You know, I grew up in a place just like where you are. And look what I'm able to do. I challenge you to do more than me, you know, because I spoke their language. I came from their tribe. And to your point, there's statistics that say if you go around and tell everybody what you're going to do, you're this much, I think it's 40% more likely to do it. And then when I do motivational speaking too, I say, always talk to yourself empowering and kind, because who do you listen to the most in life? You.
Right.
Right? So say it out loud. Tell other people. You know, hold yourself accountable. You know, it's like Mike Tyson says, you know, everybody's got a plan until they start getting punched in the face, you know, and what happens when you set a goal? It seems like the universe starts punching you in the face and starts trying to knock you off track, you know? And so what we've done is we've created this toolbox of tools that we gift to people to help them navigate the jungle of quitting. You know, which is vast. And we have a great toolbox at QuitProof to help people, you know, get through this jungle, not give up, give in, tap out, and quit somewhere along the way. And so the goal of getting, all I knew as I had to do was get to the next children's home. That's it. That was my goal. All I have to do is get to the next one, get the next one, get the next one. And then next thing you know, I'm 120 marathons. I'm in New York City. I'm at Nike Town and I'm speaking at Nike Town and I get all worked up and I'm like, I'm not done. I want to run the New York Marathon tomorrow, because the New York Marathon was tomorrow and I ran the New York Marathon the next day. You know, and when I paddleboarded from Oregon to Mexico, then that was in 2007 because I wanted to do something for the environment. I felt the unacceptable amount of plastic in the water was unacceptable, and what it was doing to marine life and humans and all was unacceptable. So I wanted to bring awareness to it. I met the guy that discovered this trash patch out in the Pacific when it was obscure. Now everybody knows about it. So 2007, I paddled from Oregon to Mexico to bring awareness to it. In 2010, Jeff, I paddled from Key West to New York, and I broke that record. Again, except this time with a sixth grade education, I came up with an environmental youth education program that is now taught in schools, right? So I'm like, so what's your excuse? You know what I mean?
Right.
So what I do is I just keep going, because I'm supposed to be the guy at the ready teller behind your loved ones to do horrible things to them and feel great about it and have you read about me in the newspaper the next day and feel sorry for all of us, you know? So I've really taken that and turned it on its ear. So where a lot of, and what we teach is where people find adversity, we flip that over. And where's the opportunity? What am I supposed to learn? How am I supposed to grow? Why is this happening to me to make me a better person? You know, those type things.
Well, I know you talked about all the commonalities. I have to just highlight. I mean, it is very cool and very ironic. I mean, we have two guys here. You have a sixth grade education. I guess I'm feeling super accomplished because I made it through half of my junior year of high school. And then I did go to college, but I dropped out of high school and I only got into college because I could play piano. But that was kind of like my Marines, right? It was where I landed. But two pretty unlikely guys to have programs running in traditional schools right now. And through our organization, we've built this Integrate program that's for juniors and seniors, and you've got an environmental awareness youth program. So, you know, I'd say good on us, but more importantly, like, yeah, let that be a lesson to the world.
Yeah.
That, you know, that you're, there's a huge difference between what is probable based on your story and what is possible based on your story.
Yeah, and with stone tools and carving knives, right, we both built some pretty good stuff, you know? By rubbing two sticks together really hard, we created a pretty decent fire, you know? Yeah. Anybody can do it. It's just a matter of, again, why?
Yeah, so you're hitting on it. I mean, it's a great metaphor, right? Like, rubbing two sticks together, you know, yeah, it's one thing. I mean, you got to work pretty hard just to make a spark, but then to set the whole world on fire, you really got to work. And this muscle, this grit muscle, look, I was not given, I don't believe I probably have the God-given ability to paddleboard from Key West to New York. I'm not sure my arms and shoulders worked out well, but I was given a stick-to-itiveness. Like, I will grind until. Whatever until means, I will grind until. Clearly, you will too. Do you believe... And cat out of the bag, I believe, so maybe I'm asking if you agree, that is the single most important criteria for achieving great things in this world is just the simple ability to keep pushing yourself past the point of all absurdity.
Oh, amen. And so, you know, you have said a couple times, you know, I think my shoulders are not okay. Right? You've done the same thing in business. It's just a different arena. That's it. You use the same methodology, you know, the same grit, the same, I'm going to find a way. I'm not going to quit. I'm not going to let it kick my butt. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to adapt. I'm going to
overcome. Do you have a theory on grit? I mean, you talked about a true north, but I'm talking, you know, actually to reference the Mike Tyson quote about getting punched in the face, I feel like life comes down to the conversations we have in our own head while we're getting literally or figuratively punched in the face. Like, that's when our life is forged. And I'm curious if you have a science or a formula around how to control those conversations. Because I have to imagine that when you're engaging in these endurance feats, you know, again, metaphorically, it's like getting punched in the face nonstop for 121 days. Like, it hurts and you want it to stop. And you're having to control the conversation in your mind. Have you figured out the secret to that?
I have. You have to create a sentinel in your mind that alerts you right away when you're starting to think about quitting. Think about it like as you're standing on a sidewalk while 60 to 80,000 cars are rushing down the street. Those are your thoughts every day. And then your sentinel goes, there's a red car. There's a red car over there. That's you wanting to quit, right? So your sentinel, you have to learn to think about your thinking, right? Mm-hmm. You and your thoughts are two separate things. So you have to learn to think about you have to create a sentinel that tells you right away, hey man, you're starting to go down a slippery slope here. Whatever that slippery slope is, I call it quitting, okay? Then you interdict it with a power statement. Stop. No, I'm not doing that. So you stop it right away. You stop that fear loop right in its tracks and you interdict it. No, I'm not quitting. I'm not going down that path. I'm not gonna hit my wife. I'm not gonna drink. I'm not gonna whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then you redirect it, right? You can do that. I like to use mantras, you know, I got this, you got this, easy day. I'm looking good. I'm feeling good. I ought to be in the Hollywood. Go, Tom, go, go, Tom, go. Yeah, how many times I use that while I'm crying on the side of the road? And then So I redirect that back into positivity, and then I maintain that positive mindset. And when it happens again, I just rinse and repeat.
When did this sentinel first emerge in your mind?
When I was running across the country in 100 and whatever degree heat, the only agreement I had with myself was if I could put one foot in front of the other, I wouldn't stop running. Mm-hmm. So I'm on the side of the road. I'm crying my eyes out. I'm like, this sucks. My toenails have fallen off more than once. I have blisters all over my feet. I can't walk, blah, blah, blah. Cry, cry, cry. And then a sentinel just appeared and said, you can keep going. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. And I was crying and I get up.
So it's literally as simple as like, I'm not dead. I'm not paralyzed. Therefore.
And I'm not lying to myself. I'm not lying.
Ooh, that's probably bigger than the other two.
Yeah, I'm not lying to myself. At the end of the day, I'm out in the middle of the desert by myself with my pace car 5 miles ahead of me waiting for me because it couldn't go right next to me because you can't impede traffic. So I'm sitting there all by myself and I'm like, oh crap, I actually can. I'm just trying to talk myself out of it. I'm literally sitting here crying my eyes out, trying to convince myself that I can't do it when I know deep down inside I can't. So
huge epiphany, keep going, and then I'm going to share the epiphany. Sorry, go ahead.
No worries. And if you want to just, we can stop right there and I can hold my thoughts. So go ahead, spit it out. What do you got?
Okay, well, here's my epiphany. So often we think we're trying to convince ourselves that we can do something. And what you just flipped for me is that actually deep down we already know it. And we're hiding behind that because really we're trying to tell ourselves, give ourselves permission to not do it under the guise of convincing ourselves that we can, because deep down we already know that we can because we're still alive and we can.
And at the end of the day, deep down inside, you know you. You know you. So if I got up and I actually fell down and I got up and I tried again and I actually fell down and I couldn't take the step, okay, that's physical proof that you can't do it. But I was sitting there blowing smoke up my own can, you know what I mean? And I knew it deep down inside. And I was like, I kept running. I was still crying, but I kept going. And then, you know, after a while, I just dispensed with the sit down and 30-minute cry session, and I just kept going. I was like, yeah. On the side of the road.
Because you knew how the cry session was going to end anyways. It was just going to end with you presuming. So.
Yeah. Correct. So that's one of the, you know, that's one of the tools that we teach, you know, being able to control your emotions, right? Because that's the one thing that most people have the most trouble with is controlling their emotions, right? That being the commander of your emotional control room, you know? And so at QuitProof, we teach people how to be the commander of their emotional control room. We do that through breath work, you know, through visualization, through positive self-talk, and at the end of the day, you got to have a strong North Star. That's the key. I knew that those kids were just like me, and I knew that if I had somebody just like me that came and talked to me, that my life might have been different earlier than it was different. And also when we dedicated that playground, I was like, so Jeff, I've helped by vans for battered women. I've helped buy football fields, baseball fields, soccer fields. You know, I don't care. I don't care. If it does good for humanity and people, guess what? Count me in. And now with QuitProof and, you know, writing this book that we're writing called Becoming QuitProof, it's really great because of the way that we're doing. I have this great ghostwriter that I'm working with and this great team that I'm working with. And we're using my life story, but we're also injecting into that facts about post-traumatic growth. Hey, man, there's life after trauma, and we can show you how, right? Who's the shapeshifter in your life? Answer these questions. What's your adversity? You know, so the book is a true self-help book. It's a memoir with real life, field-tested, mother-approved methods of improving yourself and getting through these things. You know, we're starting to work with veterans that, you know, have post-traumatic stress. You know, I've been able to navigate my way through it, just like you've been able to navigate your way through everything to have Entree, which is an amazing thing. I mean, what you're doing is this exact same thing in the business world. You know, it's really amazing. And that's why I was really so excited. Like I said at the beginning, this is why I was extremely excited to be on this particular podcast, you know, because of the connection that I know that you and I had, and now that we're having, you know, is so powerful. And at the end of the day, guess what? Proof's in the pudding. It is.
I feel like there's so many commonalities here where, you know, and I encourage, you know, I'm always thinking, you know, about the audience, right? Who's listening to this conversation? And the reality is, you know, probably the majority of people listening are not actively setting out to break any world endurance records. And probably the majority listening are not actively setting out to build a disruptive platform to modernize education, right? Like those are our particular goals. But everybody, I love that you use the term post-traumatic growth. I think I've heard that, but probably not nearly enough. Like everybody talks about post-traumatic stress, but those really are two sides of the same coin. And to believe that and to try to, I think every human on earth, they don't have to have your goals, they don't have to have my goals, but every human on earth can say, okay, what have I been through? What have I overcome? What have I learned? And how can I use all that to figure out a mechanism through which to serve and help people, and also tie it to my life story and my experience and my identity, so that it will naturally feel doable? Like, because helping people is a lot of work. It's more work to help others than it is to help yourself. Like it's kind of the lazy way out to just be selfish, but actually helping others is more work. But what I've found is that if you anchor it to your life story, like for you, it's tying it to children's homes. For me, it's like, I want to disrupt education because I felt like I was abused by the educational system. Like I have a legitimate bone to pick there, right? That I don't have to manufacture willpower every day when I wake up. I wake up already fired up to do that. And so when you tie it to your life experience and then you find a way to harness your life experience and use it to help others, I believe that every single human on earth can take all that and find a way to do all that and obviously make a living and survive and put food on the table.
So you know where I think it relates to the listeners? Here's where I think it relates to the listeners, because when I was running across North America the first time, and they would just ask me in interviews, why are you doing this? I'm like, because I'm trying to inspire you to do your marathon today. What's your marathon today? Is it getting out of bed? Is it not having that drink today? Is it not having an abusive relationship with your wife today? Is it going to school today? What's your marathon today? What is it? That's what makes it relative to anybody, right? Yeah. Because my marathon and, you know, Sally in Wisconsin's marathon, they're two different things, but they're relative, you know, that's the thing. And that's the same thing with trauma, right? Trauma's relative. Over 90, the statistics say that 90% of people have gone through a significant trauma in life. Guess what? I'd like to meet the 10% that haven't, right. You know? So it applies to everybody because it's relative. Trauma's a relative thing and everybody deals with it. Welcome to Earth, right? Place of trauma, you know, and when you take that adversity and you flip it over and you look at the opportunity, you're like, okay, welcome to Earth, place of trauma. Why? Because without trauma, there's no growth, right? Without obstacles, there's no hurdling. Without, you know, dark, there's no light. Without hate, there's no love. You know what I'm saying? Like, This is the nature of the place that we're thrust into. So how do we take that and we flip it and we use it as fuel and we turn that into a flamethrower and have a great life? Because I believe that's what we're meant to do, right? I believe that's what we're meant to do. We just have to find our path to do that.
Yeah, let's camp on that for a sec. We are meant to have a great life. Sadly, my experience, I think a lot of people have abandoned that belief.
That's a sad statement, and you're right. And that's why people like you and me exist, right? Is to take that and cry BS on it. That's not true at all. And here, take my hand. I'm telling people straight out, take my hand. I'll show you the way. I made it. I lived. I figured it out, right? I'll put my coffee beans up against anybody's. I'll put my resume straight up against anyone's. I don't care, you know? And I'm telling people, hey, if you don't think you can do it, take my hand. I'll show you the way. We can do this together. Yes, we can. We got this.
I'm curious, there's kind of this parable of, like, I've heard it told a variety of ways, but usually it's like, oh, you know, there was a pair of twins that were separated at birth. I've heard this story multiple times. Separated at birth, and they, or I don't remember. Actually, I don't remember the story. Pair of twins.
I'll say.
You know the story. They're like, well, one of them, they both had an alcoholic parent. And okay, you could tell the story. I'm screwing it up.
Yeah, so the two twins are separated at birth. And so they were followed all the way up through to adulthood. And one ended up being, let's just say, a terrible person, had a drinking problem, ended up being a really bad person, swindled people, whatever. You know, that's Darth Vader. And then the other guy ended up being Luke Skywalker. Had a wonderful relationship with his family, did great things, helped other people. And they asked both of them, why did you end up the way that you ended up? And the guy that was Darth Vader said, well, you know, I was raised by an alcoholic parent, was abusive and blah, 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 blah. So you see, I ended up this way because of that. And then they asked the twin brother, hey, how come you ended up being Luke Skywalker? He says, well, you see, I had an abusive father who was an alcoholic. So you see, I had to. And so both of them had, you know, the same stimulus to a different result, you know, and again, that comes back to what? Perspective. You're in the lemonade, or you're going to let it be lemons, you know?
The way I characterize it, you know, I think a lot about trauma because even for example, I mentioned you before we hit record, like if anybody's seen this on YouTube, you might think Jeff looks like he's sitting in a bleak, you know, is Jeff in prison or something? Like, where is he? I'm down at a summer camp in Central Texas where we're doing personal development work with a number of our students. I'm present at a lot of these events, and it's every, you know, one of the things we do here is people tend to kind of unpack their stuff, and everybody seems to have, like you said, I don't know who this 10% is, because everybody seems to have some trauma to pull out and deal with. And I think a lot about trauma because I think about how it's not trauma, but it's our reaction to trauma that seems to ultimately become the inhibitor for a lot of people on their potential, which I'm in the business of trying to unlock. And so I'm like, okay, we're going to have to work through this trauma bit. And I've basically decided trauma is how the universe shows you in a way that you will remember that the only thing you're in control of in your environment is yourself. Like that's what all trauma is it's ultimately when you have an experience where you viscerally and painfully come to grips with the fact that you cannot control your environment. And in fact, you are subject to your environment. And then from that, people either go, oh, okay, all I can control is myself. And I'm willing to do that, however hard it is. And therefore I will build something great. Or, oh crap, I can't control anything but myself. And that's terrifying. And so I'm just going to like sort of draw in and crumble and, you know, become defined by that experience. And yeah, I feel like if we can solve for which way people go with trauma, I mean, we set the world free from itself, you know?
Well, that's why first of all, hashtag truth. Okay. That's straight up truth. And that's why in the book that we're putting out Becoming Quit Proof, we show people how to sledgehammer down the wall. We show people how to take the adversity and turn it into opportunity. You know, we have you know, exercises that people can go through to do these things. We have a coaching program that we're launching at the same time of the book that literally trains people on how to do this. And it comes down to perspective. When we are able to get people to shift their perspective to this is not an adversity, you know, was it Marcus Aurelius? Like, adversity is the pathway to success. You know, like these are the stepping stones to a better place. So it's about changing that mindset to where, hey man, this isn't adversity. This is opportunity. This is the way I get stronger. This is the way God meant it. You know, when I got to New York, I did an interview with the Christian Coalition, and they said to me, they said, "So Tom, what's your religious background? What's that look like?" And I said, I said a lot of people, you know, they go to church and they have fellowship and community, which I think great because community is incredibly important. And I said, but for me, I said, you could call me God's field representative. I said, I take God to the people. You know, mm-hmm. I go out and I touch people. That's what I do. That's my religious preference. That's how I worship God. I take God and I share my version of God with people. I take it to the people. I take it to the street. You know, I'm God's field representative. I go.
I love that. You're in outbound sales.
Yeah, 100%.
A lot of people are doing inbound, waiting for, you know.
I do what you did. I knock on doors.
I love that. Oh, I love that. This has been an awesome primer to you, to QuitProof. I'm sure the audience, like myself, is wanting to know a lot more about the QuitProof movement and what you do. It sounds like you have a book coming out. I assume you have a website. I know you have social media properties. Can you please share with the audience how they can come connect with you and get more of this and learn more about the movement?
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. It's all QuitProof. It's quitproof.com. On social media, I'm Tom Jones QuitProof on Facebook. I'm QuitProof and the number one on Instagram. On YouTube, it's QuitProof. Easy to find. If you just Google in QuitProof, you're going to get hammered.
By the way, what a great term that, like, I don't want to say I'm amazed it's not taken, because it is taken because you took it. But I mean, like, what a badass word.
So I have a good friend. His name's Laird Hamilton, the big wave surfer. So I've worked out with Laird. So I went to Laird in 2007 to learn how to stand up paddleboard to do Oregon to Mexico. Mm-hmm. So anyway, to make a very long story short, we became extremely close friends. So Laird lives in Malibu and he also lives in Hawaii. But when he's in Malibu, I drive up to his house and I work out with him, because we're kind of two peas in a pod. He sits me down one day and says, you know what? And we're talking about Kid Rock. We're talking about Rick Rubin. We're talking about these famous people come up and they work out at his house, right? And he's like, you know, you and I have become close friends. You have more in your backyard than most people that come up here. You need a brand. So I'm sitting with Laird and a guy named Darren Olin. And he says, you know what? I know a lady that's a professional namer. And I go, a what? He goes, a professional namer. So I meet this lady. Her name's Cannon Wing. In fact, she's the one that's ghostwriting the book, right? And she is a professional namer. So I meet her and I drive up in my Honda Ridgeline truck, right? And I'm like, so what's a professional namer? She goes, you see your truck? I go, yeah. She goes, I named that. I go, you did? She goes, have you heard of Snuggle? I go, yeah. She goes, I named that. She goes, have you heard of MTV2? I'm like, yeah. She goes, I named that. I felt guilty about taking the money, but I did. So anyway, I paid her. And so she says to me, we do 2 days of extensive, deep interview, right? She goes, I'm going on vacation. I'll call you in 2 weeks. She calls me in 2 days, spitting excited. And I'm like, aren't you on vacation? She goes, yes, I'm on vacation. She goes, but you're QuitProof. You're QuitProof. QuitProof. That's what you are. And I was like, oh my gosh, you actually nailed it.
Yeah.
Holy crud. So that's how the name came about.
In a movement was born. I love it. Well, sometimes that it just takes a name to unlock everything. Well, Tom, thank you, man. This has been incredible. I am inspired. I am excited for, you know, hopefully a friendship and a relationship that extends well beyond this 60-minute podcast episode. But Dude, what a gem of a human. Thank you for everything you're doing in this world.
Well, thanks. And thank you right back at you, because you know something? I love your unlock your full potential, because I am literally poster child for that. I am with you. You're literally poster child for it too. Like, I am the living embodiment of unlock your full potential. Like, I'm telling every listener here, you can do it. And Jeff Lerner and Tom Jones can show you the way how to do it. And I would love nothing more than to have, like I said at the beginning, I don't mind throwing my intentions out on the table, you know, seeing my intentions, because I think that's just honorable. I definitely, you know, I want to have a very long-term relationship with you. I think that the universe put us together for a reason, because the universe doesn't do nothing for no reason. Everything the universe does is for a reason. So to be continued. And thank you so much for having me. Thanks for being such a great host, asking great questions, having a great back and forth conversation instead of me sit here and pontificate and you nod your head up and down. Yes. So it's been a good back and forth. So thank you, Jeff.
No, it's my pleasure. This definitely ain't one of those shows. And I agree. The universe brought us together for a reason. In this case, that reason was to serve you, the audience, which I'm so grateful for the opportunity to do and hopeful that we did with excellence. As always, you are truly the best part of the show. You're why I do what I do every single day, and I'm so glad we got to spend this time together. Can't wait to see you next time. Take care, everyone.
Hey, it's Jeff here. If you liked this episode of Unlock Your Potential, it would mean so much if you would like and share the episode on whatever platform you're listening or viewing on. And if you really like what we're doing here and you enjoy this podcast, please consider leaving a review. There is so much work that goes into these episodes, and you leaving a positive review lets us know that that work is reaching people, and especially it helps us reach other people. Your review could be the reason that someone else decides to tune in, check out this podcast, and unlock their potential and ultimately level up the quality of their life. So thank you so much for your support and for listening, and especially if you like or share or leave a review. Thank you for helping us spread the word, and thank you for unlocking your potential to go make the world and your world a better place.